Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week, starting it off with a spooky Halloween the Tweet.
Oh, scary the way you do that, Alex. That's really good.
I don't know what that accent was. That was the scary part about it. But we're going to be talking about Batman, the Long Halloween Special number one from DC Comics, written by Jeff Loeb, art by Tim Sale. You probably figured this out already, but this is reteaming Loeb and Sale in the world of Long Halloween to continue the story.
The Halloween story just keeps going.
It's just like they keep doing, you can't hear this on a podcast, but I'm doing the drag it out symbol.
The drag it out fingers. I gotcha. Yeah, it's good. I can sort of faintly hear your fingers touching each other.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what.
You need to moisturize. You need to moisturize.
I'll tell you what, not to sound overly negative, did a little feel like dragging it out. Tim Sale's art, great.
Ooh.
I don't know that I needed this. How did you guys feel? Well, it sounds like, Pete, you did need this. This is exactly the bomb you needed in your life. B-A-L-M, bomb.
Balm.
B-A-L-M.
I came to drop balms. Got more rhymes than the Bible's got psalms. It's a better rhyme.
Anyways, I just think I you know, this is just kind of like an old classic DC kind of team up that you want to see. And it's, you know, I like the way Batman looks in this and kind of the storytelling of it, the way the art leads the way with the paneling and stuff like that. This to me is kind of like classic DC fun. So anytime they want to kind of reunite for this, I'm on board.
What about you, Justin?
To me, like the Tim Sale art is beautiful, but this is definitely, it's like a coda to the main series. This doesn't have a lot of standalone appeal. Outside of the art, which I think is amazing, it definitely feels like it's like, here are a lot of elements from The Long Halloween that we're just going to recall a little bit. And because these story points don't really happen in the larger DC universe. So the pieces we're following up on here are very specific to this book.
Right. And it also feels like, just to get into spoilers for the issue. So one of the things left dangling by The Long Halloween, sort of left up to the reader, is who actually was Holiday. And it's pretty clear if you're reading the book that it was Harvey Dent's wife, Gilda, who was Holiday, but they never explicitly say it. So it's been this long-standing mystery. Here, they're like, oh yeah, it was Gilda. And that just sort of feels like, I didn't need that. Like, I didn't need that extra bit necessarily confirming it.
Some people did, though.
That's fine. No, that's fine. I'm just saying from my perspective as a reviewer, like, if other people did, that's great. I think it was well executed. There's a good emotional beats with Harvey and Gilda in particular. But it's the sort of thing, I don't want to come out of this thinking, well, it could have been worse. You know, like that's a bummer of a feeling to come out with, because I want to love this. I love Long Halloween. I know they already did sequels to it. They did Dark Victory. And I'm blanking on the name of the other one, but it just feels like I don't need this story continued because it's one of the most perfect Batman stories ever told. So it's okay that it exists, but I'm not bummed it exists. I just...
Wow, man.
I don't know. I didn't need it.
You really took all the fucking wind out of my sails here, my Tim sails.
Your Tim sails. There's so much that you're... And people don't know this if they're only listening. Pete is actually 2 miles away from the microphone right now.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I was like, oh, man, what a great kind of like... Let's go back, you know, and kind of tell another tale and kind of have a good team up and something that kind of makes you feel like a Halloween book, like Halloween is coming. Like this is such a part of that. And, you know, you're just like, yeah, I don't need this in my life.
But that's all right. That's Alex's opinion. And you listened to it with your Jeff Loebs, and it took the wind out of your Tim sails.
Yeah, if anybody liked this or anybody knew this, that's fantastic. That's great. I am very happy about that. I am offering up my opinions as a comic book critic on our podcast.
A journalist.
Yes.
Just real quick, let's say journalist. A lot of credibility there.
Well, yes. Let's talk about something I'm sure you loved, Pete. Inferno number 2 from Marvel.
Oh, no. Wow.
What is with this start?
We should change the order. Can we change the order real quick?
Yeah, man, we're just fucking bad.
The real Pete poking order.
Written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Stefano Caselli. This is continuing Jonathan Hickman's big final story on X-Men. Picking up on the cliffhanger of the last issue, where Destiny is back alive despite Moira McTaggart, Professor X, and Magneto's best efforts to keep her from being resurrected. Here we flash back in time and see exactly how that happened, leading up to a new status quo for the Quiet Council. So I'll tell you what about this one. Love the history here. The emotion between Destiny and Mystique is awesome. I'm really still cool. Not 100% sure why this is called Inferno, though.
Well, yeah. There's more, though, right? Inferno's not over.
Yeah, there's more. There's more issues.
There's more to burn. You know, a lot of times when you're building a fire, you got to get the kindling out. You got to get the wood ready. You got to scrunch up the newspapers so they're tiny balls. That's where we are. We're scrunching up newspapers.
Where's the matches? Hey, where's the matches, honey? Where do we leave the matches? I can't find them.
Oh, I like this fire building character you're playing. This is Alex if he went to the country once.
Yeah.
Hey, babe.
Hey, where are those trees? Where'd we leave those trees, babe?
Yes, this is, there's a lot of voting, something that I know Pete likes as far as an action
sequence.
Why
is this a comic book? There is nothing that happens in this issue. All we get is a bunch of people explaining to me how voting works. And then we get these flashbacks.
There's an election coming up. I know it's not one of the big ones, like a presidential election or anything, but it's still important that people register to vote and vote in every election because it's the down ballot votes that are eventually going to lift those big ballots.
As a Pennsylvania resident, we may not know much about what Pete is voting for, though. He's voting in the stake-off or whatever.
Voting is important, okay? And I guess if that's their message there, well done. But, like, this continues to be like, hey, you're on the council, another bad person in a circle. We're going to make important decisions. Moving this Hump Island forward. What the fuck are we doing?
That's the platform for Eric Adams running for mayor. We got to move this Hump Island forward. Manhattan.
Yeah.
The thing is, the Inferno is coming, and there's a lot of stuff boiling here. All the Quiet Council stuff feels like it's going to explode. Like, Professor X, Magneto, both stressed. So something's up. Everybody's not happy. There's, a lot of factions building here. And then on the other side, we have what's going on in space and the Orcus group. And that's a lot's happening there. I think the trap is going to be sprung, I imagine, next issue. And the character revealed at the end of this issue, as a new member of the Quiet Council, I was like, oh,
that's weird. It was weird. Yeah. It was a weird choice. I didn't necessarily understand the cliffhanger going on here, but like you're saying, I think it feels literally like they're moving chess pieces around a board at this point. So while I appreciated all the flashback, I do want to get to whatever the explosion is, you know?
Yeah, let's get to something.
Well, let's get to the next title, which is Batman Fortnite Foundation, number 1 from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, Christos Gage, and Donald Mustard. art by Joshua Hickson. This is following up on the smash hit miniseries Batman Fortnite Zero Point. And here we're getting all of the villains, excuse me, of the DC universe trying to get in a new crack in the universe. We meet a new character called the Foundation who teams up with Batman to try to stop the Batman Who Laughs, who has been mysteriously resurrected. And it all eventually sets up the fact that the Batman Who Laughs is now an unlockable, playable character in Fortnite, the game. That all said, Pete, I know you're a big fan of the miniseries. What did you think about this one shot?
Yeah, I think this, they continue to have a lot of fun with this. You know, it's a fun mashup of ideas. I love how the art was changing with the different worlds changing. So that was really cool. The Batman Who Laughs is too creepy for me. So it would be great if he could just live in this pocket world.
Really?
And not join the regular DC world again, because I do not like him.
Is it his pointy hat? Or I guess they're sort of sunglasses.
It's all of it.
Interesting. I thought this was cool. I actually really like the Foundation character, a character that I would like to see more of just in the regular DC universe. The idea of like someone who is in like a pocket dimension of their own creation, is very strong, but sort of like unable to figure out what anyone's doing and why. Great catalyst for the DC universe, perhaps.
Yeah, I like this. I think the real standout for me was the art in this book. Joshua Hickson's art was awesome throughout. Yep. So good. Really liked it. Not exactly the same sort of thing, but reminiscent a little bit of Francesco Francavilla without the shading or extreme coloring that usually goes on with his work. But it didn't necessarily have the emotional hook of the first miniseries, which was Bat and Cat, and that was so strong and so awesome throughout that. But at the same time, these crossovers are so much better than they have any right to be, is essentially what's going on. Yeah. Next up, let's talk about House of Slaughter, number one from Boom Studios, written by James Town IV and Tate Bromel, art by Chris Sheehan. This is the first spinoff of Something is Killing the Children. Here we're focusing on our main character from that series, quote unquote brother, basically another member of the House of Slaughter. We get a little bit back into time with him, as well as what's going on with him in the present, what mission he's running. I thought this was phenomenal.
Agreed.
Really great.
I loved everything about this. The art continues just to be absolutely bananas. The little glowing owl was adorable. It's cool to kind of see the other side of it. We've been with the main set of characters in this book, so it was nice to see. We kind of got the introduction of the House of Slaughter, but like to see kind of other factions of it and how it works, and kind of like what kind of school this is pretty interesting and pretty cool. So this just continues to be such a kick-ass series. I'm so glad for all the success it's having.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like they've successfully built a like creepy Harry Potter-esque little universe here that I'm dying to explore. Like the sort of the way they, you know, capture, they have their own little personal monster. They're training to fight these scary monsters. It's bad that a lot of them are bad at it.
Handkerchiefs.
They've got a lot of different handkerchiefs, different colors of handkerchiefs. Some have teeth, some have no teeth.
Yeah, and it's interesting how you pronounce handkerchiefs.
Handkerchiefs?
Yeah, you guys don't pronounce it handkerchief?
What? No, they're the handkerchiefs.
Handkerchief.
They're the most important hankers. They're the handkerchiefs.
Regional differences, I guess.
I guess so.
Nah.
Task Force.
How many handkerchiefs do you have?
None, but I have several handkerchiefs. And Task Force Z, number one from DC Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg, art by Eddie Barrows. In case you couldn't figure out from the title, this is basically a Suicide Squad led by the Red Hood, but with a bunch of dead villains who are resurrected using a formula. If they go crazy, they're going to start biting and eating people, but they got some chemicals to keep that at bay. Pete, what'd you think about this one?
I think this is just kind of like a fun zombie themed kind of thing. I thought this was kind of like a classic DC comic. Great writing, amazing art. I think it's creative enough to like to be different enough. So I think this is cool.
Love to see Crazy Quilt out there, especially at this time of year when everyone's working on their own personal quilts. It really feels topical. The premise of this book doesn't make a lot of sense, but I will say the book does a great job of being like, so let's just some fun.
Yeah, let's just
have some fun. I'm here for it. I like Matt Rosenberg's writing, and this is, and the art's good.
Bergie.
I definitely spent a lot of the book wondering whether it was in continuity or not. And ultimately, I think it is.
Maybe? Yeah, I think it is, too. I wanted it to be more of a zombie book.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what it will become eventually.
Yeah, it'll get there.
Feels like they don't have a lot of great control of the zombie biting, the zombies biting. So I think we could definitely get a zombie sitch on our hands here pretty fast.
Potentially. Next up, The Harbinger, number one from Valiant Comics, written by Colin Kelly, art by Jackson Lansing. After a long time away, we're finally getting a Harbinger title here. We got Peter Stanchik, wakes up, has no memory, finds a world with a Psyot town, very different from Mutant Town back in the day in Marvel Comics. But he explores there, tries to figure out what happened to his memory, and clashes with a bunch of people. I really like this quite a bit, even though I'm a bit behind on Harbinger continuity. But what did you guys think?
Yeah, I really especially love the art. You get a cool character, Cece, in here. I like those kind of like moments. You know, there's a lot of big over-the-top moments, but there's also a lot of cool small moments in the book, and they do that really well. I love this as a number one, kind of like really getting us up to speed with everything, setting things up in an exciting way, and kind of the last page gets you pumped for more. I agree. This is a great comic. I'm excited for this.
Yeah, I like this a lot, too. The story is really nice, really well written, great like interior monologue happening throughout. And like Pete said, the art's really good. This feels like a great way to reboot Harbinger, something that's happened before. But I don't quite know what happens at the end of this issue, but it seems scary.
I agree. Let's move on to another scary book then. DC versus Vampires, number one from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV and Matthew Rosenberg, art by Otto Schmidt. This is one that is out of continuity and all about vampires invading the DC universe. Pete, I know you were pleasantly surprised by this one. Lay down your thoughts.
Yeah, this was one of my favorites for this week. I thought like, all right, here we go. But I was really impressed with this. It was a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be. Enjoyed the Green Lantern being a complete douchebag. Also, love the Alfred stuff. Oh, Alfred, miss you. Miss you, Alfred. Yeah, I think this was a fantastic...
Doesn't he show up for one page at the end?
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
And for those of you listening, we actually edited out Pete went on about how much he missed Alfred for a full 25 minutes. We had to cut it. And I'm so sorry. We're going to release that separately on the saddest Patreon launch you've ever heard.
But as far as the number one, I think this does an unbelievable job of getting somebody hooked on something and excited for more.
I agree. Hal Jordan being such a jerk was fun. It was funny. I feel like Hal Jordan's one of those characters that he had this brash sort of thing, was how he came up, and then eventually he had to be such a sort of savior hero that all went away. And to see him being just pretty, just like shooting from the hip, like, hey, I don't know, I don't care. This is who I am. I'm Green Lantern. I'm busy. I can't believe they left me behind. They all went to space. Anyway, I just killed this other guy.
What do you think about the character of I, Vampire, constantly referring to himself as I, Vampire?
I like it so much, I'm thinking of doing it. I'm going to be I, Justin. I, Justin, liked this comic.
Next up.
Is it cool? Is that chill? Is that a chill thing to say?
That's chill, as the kids say.
Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath this facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Caped Crusader and Batman The Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max. Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure told across 10 episodes is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villasenor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fred Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman the Audio Adventures only on HBO Max.
Chew number nine from Image Comics. And Chew! Written by John Layman, art by Dan Boltwood. This is CHU continuing a crime heist throughout time. They found a wine that lets you travel through time.
Time crime with wine.
I mean, that's probably where that idea started. But as usual with this book, it is a fun crime romp. I just have a blast reading this every single month.
We get some backstory here on how a cater waiter gets into a life of crime, which was fun.
That's got to feel right up your alley, buddy. You know what I mean? Like, you knew back in the day. Kind of like,
I've been there.
Back when you were traveling around the world, you know?
What? Traveling around the world committing crimes.
Yeah.
Wine crimes.
Wine. I think this is really great art. It's a nice departure from two, but still feels good. The character's fun. It's a little different, but just different enough. This continues to be great. I also really love the cover and this kind of like painting, kind of like hint to what might happen in the future. I think it's great.
Good stuff. Next up, The Amazing Spider-Man number 77 from Marvel, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Sarah Pacelli. Now, the first arc here was written by Zeb Wells. Now that Peter Parker is in a coma, Ben Reilly is Spider-Man full-time. This is the first arc of that, also kicking off with Kelly Thompson's run on the title. What'd you think about this? Pete, I know you've been conflicted about Spider-Man in general. Now that things have been streamlined a little bit, how do you feel about Ben Reilly's adventures?
Not a fan of the Ben, but by the end of this issue, I was like, now we're talking. All right, this could get interesting. I'm excited.
When Morbius shows up?
Yep, that kind of last panel, I was like, yeah, let's do this. And then kind of get the real Spider-Man back, and let's have some fun.
Spider-Man's in a coma. He's probably going to die.
Well, he's going to wake up, because it seems like this Ben and Peter thing is kind of one's off, one's on.
Peter Parker is going to probably die. And then and they'll never bring Peter Parker
Who
back.
Are you?
And then Mary Jane will die.
Oh, you're the worst person.
They're going to... No, they're one of them will
heart.
Always...
I have a broken heart.
That's nice. It's a fun way to die. I think it's going to be like just a lot of taking turns being in a coma. Coma swap.
That's a fun arc. That's a fun arc.
By the way, this is a total side note, but did you ever have the coma swap Spider-Man figure back in the day? I got that at Toys R Us. I got like the last one on the shelf, so I was pretty excited.
Completely unarticulated. No bendable appendages.
No, just lay there in the package.
It was glued to the hospital bed that came with it.
It was great. It really saved you a lot of the energy in terms of coming up with creative playtime.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, killed my imagination. Exhausting imagining things.
And Peter's still sleeping. So I have a question for this book. Now, right. Ben Reilly, clone, coming in. A lot of similar experiences
coming
to Spider-Man.
Hot.
Coming in hot. When he's fighting and playing around, pretty quippy, pretty making jokes.
Right.
In an organization where he's sort of like, I'm sort of messing up a little bit. Oh, but when I'm not here, I go home to my girlfriend who has red hair.
Yep.
What's the point of this so far? Like, why? And I don't mean that in a super negative way.
It seems like a negative thing to say.
I don't mean that. But it does seem deliberate that Ben Reilly's things are all almost identical to Peter Parker's. And then at the end of the issue, something sort of bad happens to him, dramatic. Is Ben Reilly like sort of the knockabout Spider-Man? The Spider-Man we can like mess up while Peter Parker has to stay pristine in the coma?
Potentially. I mean, I think at the very least, I don't know if this is what you're getting towards. There's obviously a lot of things with the Beyond Corporation that we don't know about. That certainly seems the big overarching, what is their goal thing going on here? But also, like you're saying, I think it's Janine is the name of his girlfriend. Certainly seems like she is a clone of Mary Jane who is being held in their apartment by the Beyond Corporation, or is not real or something like that. So
yeah.
It feels to me like they're slow playing a lot of these mysteries purposely so, where we're going to get these answers, just not yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. And that's a really interesting story, the idea that it's like we've formed this person to be like our version of Spider-Man, where it doesn't matter if he gets hurt or killed. Like, what does that mean for the character whose head we're in? I'm excited to see if that's what it is.
Yeah. Next up, Adventure Man number 6 from Image Comics, written by Matt Fraction, art by Terry and Rachel Dodson. We are officially kicking off the second arc of this title after the big introductory arc, with our new Adventure Man going on her second adventure, tracking down a ghost train. Art continues to be great
the
in this
old
title.
Ghost train.
Gold ghost train. Art continues to be great in this title. They are having a lot of fun writing it. I'm enjoying it. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, art's unbelievable. I mean, let's not undersell how great the art is.
I don't think we're doing that.
No, I started out saying the art was great.
Art's great.
Yeah, I mean, but
the
way you say it.
I charged everybody upwards of $500 just for me to say the art is great. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, no, Pete, are you worried we're overselling the art?
Yeah. No.
We're shifting from an undersell to an oversell.
That's fine. I just, when someone says art's great, you know, with no meaning behind it, I'm worried that it's not going to be.
Oh, was that an
impact.
Impersonation of me, Pete?
Yeah, you're like,
the art's great.
So anyways,
we should do is start just selling the art on the side, make a little money.
Yeah. Oh, you're selling other people's art.
Underselling and overselling.
Is this a good time to mention we're selling NFTs of Adventure Man number 6?
Oh my God.
Yes, that's perfect.
Also,
you know what NFT stands for? No fucking thanks.
anyways.
Okay.
Stop. Yeah. Yeah, this isn't.
Oh, Dr. Z. Dr. Z is checking in.
Also, a lot of great back matter in this issue. This is just fun. It continues to be fun. I think they're doing a great job.
I agree. I agree with all of the fun talk. This book does feel like this went on a long hiatus recently and just came back. It feels like they've been holding in a lot of this fun energy, and it's coming back in a big way here, both in the art style, which let me just say the art is good, pretty good, and the writing as well. Oh, how did I sell that?
You didn't sell it. You didn't sell it at all.
Okay, take two.
Try saying it like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, there you go. That's what you sound like.
Yeah, it's good. This art is pretty good.
See, that makes it sound better. That's nice.
Aquaman, Green Arrow, Deep Target, number 1 from DC Comics, written by Brandon Thomas, art by Ronan Cliquette. Whatever you think this book is about, it is not about that.
This book really threw me for a loop.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was like, they're going to team up and solve some crimes. That's not what happens. Nope. Just to spoil this book, it's mostly about a guy who is screwing up time in a big way for unknown purposes, to the point where Aquaman and Green Arrow keep their beard and goatee respectively, but otherwise switch places. We don't know why. It's very weird, but I'm much more into reading this book after I read the first issue than I was going into it, to be frank.
It's it's like Freaky Friday, but with Aquaman and Green Arrow. It's Deep Target. It's the deep fake is what it is.
Interesting.
It's a weird switcheroo in a way that you don't expect, because they know about it and they're cool. Like you expect, but interesting enough that I'm going to check out the second issue.
Yeah, they did a good job of keeping me intrigued. But honestly, the energy when they finally meet each other in Atlantis, and they're like, it's like and Joey and Chandler from Friends doing a scheme. They're like, what are you doing here? You're messing up this whole thing. But also this book reads a little bit like an Ultimates book, where it's like, you don't even know how extreme this is. There's time travel in this crazy place. Look, everyone's wearing different facial hair than you expected. Like there's a flex here on this book, but it's good.
Next up, Stranger Things, Tome of Yabuen, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Greg Pak, art by Diego Galindo. This is continuing a story of Will tracking down a treasure isn't the right word, but maybe treasure left by Bob Newby, the character played by Sean Astin. It's through a winter storm his friends come chasing after him in this issue. We love the first issue of this. I think, Justin, you called it the best follow-up to Stranger Things in comics so far. Yeah. What did you think about the second issue?
I thought it was good. I was surprised the kids all got together so quickly. I thought it was we were going to have a little bit of danger.
I was happy about that. I was really worried, you know, especially when it's cold like that outside. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A good friendship is just as good as a winter coat.
Well, that's not true.
Nope, but anyways, I don't. When I go outside in the winter, I just think about you two, and I'm completely nude.
That's not going to work. That's going to get you arrested. You're going to have all sorts of frostbite places you didn't want.
It's worked for several years, and people know me as the guy who's on that podcast with his friends.
Oh, wow.
That's what everyone in the neighborhood knows me as.
Why, look at that man out there. He's got a lot of friendship.
I don't even know what comic we're talking about because this blew my mind.
Stranger Things.
Oh, Stranger Things. You had me at Greg Pak. All right. I mean, the guy writes unbelievable stuff. This is, it really feels like just a continuation of the show. And this is a cool side adventure that I wish we got to see on television. I think they do such a great job of bringing the show to life on this comic. And I love the art. Writing's bananas.
How about Mr. Clark? A guy we went on a cruise with once.
Yeah, Randy Havens. Very good to see him in the mix
here.
Randy Havens. I really like this book. I thought this was very strong. I understand what you're saying, Justin, about the kids getting it all in the mix together. But they're in so much danger here. It's such a high level of danger for a non-supernatural situation. It's tough to walk that line. I know I mentioned that with the Stranger Things comics all the time, but I do think Greg does a really good job here of walking that.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how much, like, the low stakes thing that happened to Dustin that was driving me crazy the whole time. I was like, guys, you got to take care of this. Guys, come on, please stop and take care of him. It was the stress of that was a lot.
Good stuff. Next up, Deathstroke Inc. number 2 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Howard Porter. In this issue, Deathstroke Inc. goes to space.
Space fun
to fight a bunch of stuff. There's a lot of crazy swings happening into this book pretty much constantly.
Just the pages alone, they're like wild, sweeping double page spreads for like the whole issue.
Yeah. Great art, really fun action, over the top in all the right ways, unbelievable last page. I think this is like you think Deathstroke Inc., you're like, what? But they do a great job on kind of really delivering on it. And continues to be a solid book.
It's funny that it's Deathstroke Inc., and Deathstroke's the one everyone's like, stop making a mistake, buddy. He's sort of like the team fuck-up, which I thought was surprising.
Yeah, it's funny. It's interesting. There's clearly some big things that Joshua Williamson is layering in for the DC Universe as we get to late in the issue, which is kind of fascinating for something that feels like it's a quirky, not one-off, but quirky, off-the-beaten-path book. But he's clearly positioning it as something bigger down the road.
Well, I like that each issue feels like it's a standalone adventure that we're going to find out later there's a thread connecting it all together.
Yes, absolutely. Next up, Black Hammer Reborn, number 5 from Dark Horse Comics, DC, but it's actually Dark Horse. Written by Jeff Lemire, art by Malachi Ward and Matthew Sheehan and Rich Tomasso. In this issue, we're picking up on the huge cliffhanger of the last issue where Black Hammer's entire family died. We find out there's a twist here. There's something else going on in terms of other universes and other cities. We don't know exactly what it is, but I continue to be impressed at the many iterations of memory loss and memory changing that this whole franchise seems to find every time.
And they do a good job of it. It feels they sort of slow play us in these issues, like, it's a superhero comic, and then it gets into, it becomes this sort of mind-bending, the city above the city, all of the, in the memory and loss is sort of themes that you were talking about, Alex. Like, it really, like, gets you into bigger ideas, sort of almost, you don't even feel it until you're there, which I really appreciate. That's really hard to do, I think.
Yeah, I'm really impressed of the emotion that this comic is pulling off here. This is so moving. It's really interesting to see this character dealing with this pain, and the kind of reveal gets you so excited for more. Yeah, I continue to be really impressed with where this comic goes and what it's able to pull off. Yeah, it's really impressive.
It reminds me of comics like Zot, sort of back in the day, mm-hmm. or like the Mr. X stuff. There's this sort of odd tension hovering over everything, which is really cool.
Next up, Daredevil number 35 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Stefano Ladini, and with Francesco Mobili. This issue, we got a bunch of bullseyes and a bunch of daredevils all fighting in the middle of the New York streets, leading up to a big surprise romantic twist by the end of the issue. What'd you guys think about this one?
I like this book a lot. I think the Chip Zdarsky's really leaving his mark on the Daredevil side of the Marvel Universe and like throwing a lot at the board, and it feels different, despite the fact that it's some similar elements, Daredevil like having to atone for a crime and actually going to jail and going to court, all that, in conflict with cops, which feels like it's been going on for a while. It feels new, and the way that he's been able to bring in like a bunch of bullseye clones at the same time, we're still having the pathos heavy Matt Murdock. It's great there's no Foggy Nelson here to really mess things up.
Oh, go fuck yourself. You had to ruin this for me. I thought this was a really great comic, and then you had to go and point out something that I didn't even realize I was missing.
Oh, you know, I know. When you walk into a room and you're like, no Foggy, you just turn right back around and try to find that
page.
Foggy.
Because they mentioned that Foggy horribly died off screen.
That's not funny.
And nobody cared.
Really love the art. The action in this is fantastic. It's doing a lot of cool stuff with Daredevil. Also, like, there's some cool, interesting Kingpin emotional stuff going on here. I agree with what Justin's saying. This continues to feel...
Everything that Justin said, I agree with, is what you mean.
Not all the time, but in this case, yes. But it feels stuff. Like not... can't I just say something nice and you had not have you fucking ruin it?
Go for it.
It's too late. You ruined it.
I'm a little worried about Kingpin's romance here. Feels a little hasty.
Spoiler.
I don't know if it's going to work out. I guess we'll see.
I didn't say who it's with.
I will mention real quick as a little plug, Chip Zdarsky is actually going to be on our live show next week.
What?
So Tuesday, 7 p.m., check that out.
Wait, should this be Tuesday?
This next Tuesday.
It'll be this Tuesday.
Yep. You could all figure that out, you listeners.
Well, Echo Lab is number three. Me.
The what? Next Tuesday.
This coming Tuesday, right?
What are you doing?
As soon as the Tuesday hits, he's going to be here.
All right. Thank you, Justin.
Echo Labs number three from Image Comics by J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman. This continues this wild, twisting story of a bunch of fairy tale and story characters all thrown together. Widens out the story in a big way to include many different other types of stories this issue. Pete, I know you love this title. Talk about it.
It is worth it for the art alone. The paneling is bananas. The art is leading the way and telling some amazing stories. Punisher gets a low-key shout-out a little bit here. I really appreciated that. I just think that this is so creative and so beautiful. I love reading this comic multiple times just because the art and the paneling is so enjoyable. This is great. It continues to be bananas good. Why aren't you reading this comic?
It's a comic where I feel like you have to let it wash over you when you read it, and then pulling it back. I said this when we interviewed them, and it was maybe a confusing question. But holding it at arm's length and just looking at the comic from a distance is also beautiful. It puts everything in a bigger perspective. I also want to shout out the very last sort of bit at the end. There's a new title. It's called Rabbit Lost in the Echolands. And it's a whole, like, feels like a standalone little bit. It's such a cool little piece at the end of the book. Very cool.
Arch good. Next up, Checkmate number 5 from DC Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Alex Maleev. We're one issue from the end here, and our Checkmate team is finally taking it to Mark Shaw, a.k.a. Leviathan, in this issue. We also get the reveal of Lois Lane's brother, who is a super spy in his own right. What do you think? We've been a little bit back and forth about this title. Does this issue redeem it, or are you still waiting for the last one?
I'm still waiting for the last one because I'm confused a little bit. But the art's great. There's a lot of intense, cool
things.
What
are you confused about, Pete?
What's happening? Who's the bad guy?
Oh, so the bad guy is this guy named Mark Shaw, who is Leviathan. He has taken
former
out...
Former Manhunter.
Yep, old Manhunter. He has taken out every spy organization in the DC universe and is forming his own nation made up with the rogue spies who have escaped from that organization. Meanwhile, our heroes are trying to figure out what he is up to and take him down. In this issue, he takes the church that they're all hiding out in and teleports it to Thailand, I believe.
Yep.
And only a couple of people make it out, specifically Lois Lane, who is rescued by her brother, who is kept a secret by her father, Captain Lane. Captain, I think. Lane, her entire life. So she finally meets him. And at the end of the issue, Mark Shaw comes and is going to take them down. And that's the cliffhanger we're left with. Does that explain it?
Yeah, thank you.
No problem.
You know, this book... there's some parts that I like, but it just feels like so much of it is like a thing happens and everyone stands there and talks about it and does some bits. It feels like hanging out with an improv class.
Yes.
Going to a bar and being like, it's crazy. You see that cop just drove by. Imagine if that cop had a hat on. Oh, what hat would that cop wear? A fedora, probably. Or maybe a top hat. What if the cops had to dress up? It's just like bits. It feels like bits. And like, that's fine. But there are good elements here. I just, the way that a lot of comics are written now is you save the story for the end. And I think that's a trend I'm ready to just push back a little bit, where we get a little bit more of a narrative thread or spine that we can follow, that the bits can hang on a little bit rather than just bits, bits, bits. And then it's like, haha, the story was this.
Yeah, fair enough. Once in Future, number 21 from Boom Studios, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Dan Mora. In this issue, our grandma, Pete, makes some big moves in her fight. Makes some big moves in her fight against King Arthur and his forces. We get an ominous note that perhaps there's some bad things in her future. Pete, what'd you think about this issue?
This just continues to be so much fun. We get kind of a more reserved grandma. I mean, she does single-handedly take down the Medusa-type character, which was really badass. But, it got me a little worried about her future, a little choked up when she was writing the kind of like monster hunting for dummies kind of notes. And they got a kind of picture with her. And I'm worried that this is kind of her last issue. And I'm very scared.
Feels like once and no future is what's coming for old night grandma.
But this is just bananas good comic. Just so.
You would say top, bananas.
One of the top comics. Maybe of all time.
Pete's doctor told him he needed to get more potassium, so he's been saying bananas a lot.
That's how that works, right?
Mm-hmm. Basically. Anytime a character gets a Polaroid taken to them, days are numbered.
Absolutely. Yeah. What are you going to do if the grandma dies, Pete?
I'm going to fucking lose my fucking shit.
Are you done? Is that it? Is that your breaking point for comic books?
I might be. I don't know.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll find out soon if we have to say night, Grandma. Next up, Aquaman, The Becoming, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Brandon Thomas, art by Diego Olaturge and Skylar Partridge. In this issue, we are following Jackson, is the name of the new Aquaman, I believe. And he was heavily hurt at the end of the last issue. In this issue, we follow mostly Mera, as she keeps him hidden. There's a great twist halfway through this issue that I thought was such a neat narrative trick that I liked quite a bit. But what did you guys think about this one?
I think this is a really cool story. Love the action and Mara slapping people. I think it's a great art. I continue to enjoy this.
Yeah, the art sort of has it toggles between like almost Mark Bagley-esque sort of classic superhero stuff and a little more sort of flourishy art, which I think is cool, especially for this Aquaman book. I really love the Aqualad character. And like you said, Alex, the little narrative twist I thought was really cool.
Next up, Dark Blood, number 4 from Boom Studios, written by LaToya Morgan, art by Moises Hidalgo. This issue is continuing a time-jumping story of a character who has gotten relatively undefined powers, I think, as he deals with racism in several different eras, including World War II. This book is gorgeous to look at and fascinating to read. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I am continue to just be very moved by this book. The use of colors for the different time periods is great. There's a lot of like really amazing action and different kind of like sequences that they kind of show the action through the paneling. It's very impressive. I can't say enough about the art design and the kind of the way the story has been told, because there is these different time periods overlapping, but I'm not confused by it, which is so great. I think this is one of the great books that are out right now, and it has a very interesting ending and just a horrible way to get woken up.
What this book is doing, I agree with everything that's been said, and what this book's doing especially great is you were telling stories in multiple timelines, but also the tension is being ratcheted up in each of them in a way that I was like, oh, mostly multiple timeline stories, it's all feeding into one, and that's where like the real dramatic action is happening. This, there's dramatic action happening in all of them, and it's stressful.
Yeah.
It reminds me, this is a weird comparison that I don't necessarily need to make, but the last episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, the way that the tension was ratcheting up in each of the different time periods, and then it comes together at the end, and I feel like that's where we're headed.
Yeah. Cool. Last but not least, Black Widow, number 12 from Marvel, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Elena Casagrande. In this issue, we have our little Black Widow team, which includes Black Widow, White Widow, Hawkeye, Bucky, and another character I'm blanking on the name of, all teaming up together to go on a mission. There's a twist at the end where we see an old enemy of Black Widow. Love this book, but I want to give a shout out in particular to the covers, which are amazing, like absolutely amazing. This issue, the one that they tease for Black Widow 13 right at the end there, is stellar. And I feel like I'm not really struck by covers that much anymore. You know, mostly they are relatively straightforward. These are really good. Just absolutely gorgeous art here.
The other characters are Spider-Girl and Lucy Wen, I believe. I don't know what her code name is, but that's who she is. And this, the covers are great, and the story's great. It's this heavy, emotional Black Widow backstory where she was sort of placed in this undercover or like sort of almost witness protection situation, and she had a guy that she loved, had a kid, and it's messed her up because now they're gone. She's hidden them away, or Bucky's hidden them away, and she doesn't want to know where they are, keeps testing him. So dealing with all this emotion while this great action story is playing out, everyone gets to wear some cool clothes and go dancing in this issue, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, the current backstory of Bucky and Nat is that they were in love with each other.
Yeah.
Right? And then they got Black Widow's memory was wiped.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows everything. She knows nothing about their relationship. So with that context, this book is doubly heartbreaking. Because you got Bucky there, like, taking care of her at the same – still loves her, presumably. At the same time, she's super upset about this other relationship she can't have anymore that she had a kid with.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
By the way, the cover artist is Adam Hughes, but I think
– that checks out.
Yeah, that definitely checks out.
That checks out.
But the coloring of the covers in particular is so different for him. Is usually I feel like he does like very darker, bright stuff. This is very dark, lots of reds, lots of blacks, of course. Great. Looks really good. But great book.
I just can't say.
Nice, tight little package, right, Pete?
Yeah. That's it.
I just want to say, like, the right end, this is phenomenal. Here's a character we've seen a shit ton of stories with. And it's just, this is, feels great, feels new, but feels like the character. I'm really impressed with the art and the storytelling in this. This is a fantastic book. And I wanted to quickly give a shout out. We were reading a bunch of Wonder Girls. Wonder Girl number 4 continues just to be a badass story and amazing action and art and fun bit about a flying horse.
Great. Great to hear it. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Great art.